for your fire applications, start here. You know, start with when you're looking at, you know, feeding a mobile app, when you're looking at feeding interactive communication to help populate some sort of application, whether it's a handheld mobile device or a tablet. You know, you're trying to do a little bit of light gathering of information about that patient. Fire makes a lot of sense.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We're here today with Jan Vekemans, country sales manager in Belgium, founder of the hashtag One Patient, One Record for Belgium over at InterSystems. We're also joined by John Goodgame, a sales engineer at InterSystems. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Jordan.
What I'd like to do is discuss fire adoption and consent policies both in Europe and in the United States. So I'd like to pass it over to Jan to start. Jan, would you please talk to us about what the current state of fire adoption is in Belgium and Europe more generally?
Well, Jordan, in the last couple of days, I've been here at HIMSS in Chicago. And that gave me a bit of a perspective of the differences between what's happening in Europe and what's happening over here. And I must say, globally, we can say that the world's on fire. Fire is gaining momentum in Europe. And what we can see is that in the larger countries, there are in every country at least one major project that is being taking place. What I'm lacking and what I'm seeing here in the US much more than in Europe, and John is going to probably contradict me on some of this, but there is more a coordinated effort that is taking place here in the US. Because in all the booths that I've been to, in all the people that I talk to here, we're all having the noses in the same direction, not necessarily in the details, but at least in the story. And when we talk in Europe, well, when you're in the UK, you get a good story. When you're in Germany, you get a good story, but it's not the same story. And that is still a worry that I have, that we're looking at a standard that's going to be standardized per country rather than standardized overall.
John, what are you seeing in fire in the United States? What sort of adoption trends and standards and what is the story that you're seeing here with fire adoption?
So yeah, generally speaking, I do think that there is a pull in the same direction here. And we're seeing more and more fire use cases being put into service at the hospitals and facilities. I would say, you know, up until maybe this last year or so, most people were saying, oh, I need to do fire, and they do one or two interfaces, and then they go, yeah, we do fire, and that would be the end of it. And I think there's a misunderstanding about what fire is really intended to be used for. So I think there's been some, you know, some scars over the last few years of people using it incorrectly, or at least for its current state incorrectly. I mean, maybe one day fire will be used for, you know, the event-driven sending information. But generally speaking, you know, you see people using the old HL7V2.x for their event-driven, like ADT, where you're feeding another system, a source system's feeding another system. You really don't want to necessarily have that as your fire interface. You really want it to be used in the case where maybe you're requesting information from that system, and maybe from a mobile app or from some other device, but you're not like feeding another system that needs the ADT information, you know, as it happens. It's just not quite there yet to be used in that use case. But definitely more and more people are using fire. And I think more and more people are gearing their purchases toward using fire.
Mm-hmm. So Jan, I'd like to ask you a particular fire use cases in Europe that you've seen. You said that there's a good story in the UK, good story in Germany, but sometimes it's not the same story. Our listeners, CIOs of large health systems in the United States, are very interested in having these in listening to anecdotes and hearing exactly what sort of stories are transpiring, I think that will illustrate potentially the differences between Europe and the U.S. Would you mind sharing a story about fire use cases among some of your customers?
Yeah, well, let's start with the UK. The UK, the biggest country in Europe, although they're no longer part of the EU, they're still part of Europe, what some people sometimes forget. But the NHS, which is the National Health Services, has created something that's called the Digital Fire API Lab. And that is a system that will allow developers to test bed fire-based applications in basically in a sandboxed environment. That is helping enormously also for people to understand what can be done at the current stage with fire. Because one of the problems I saw in the beginning of this year and last year was that people were starting to do what John just said and try to use fire for everything. You know, fire was going to replace the entire world. That's not going to happen, certainly not with the current implementation. So having something like a lab that well, verifies and help you in a safe environment, look at what can be done with fire, is certainly a good thing. You have the same in France, where the Agence e-Santé, which is basically e-health, but then in French, is promoting interoperability through the use of fire. And in Germany, you have Gematik, who is doing the exact same thing. But here again, it's about how to exchange information rather than about doing it all. An example in my own country is where we recently had the data capability call for tenders, where Belgium is off, the government is offering 25 projects, 2 million euros in an effort to get fire-based applications out in the market. But what I find a problem with that is they have not put any boundaries on it. So if I hear what people are trying to do, they're trying to achieve exactly what they shouldn't be achieving. They were trying to build everything on fire again. So that's a problem.
John, would you care to counterpoint with American examples and use cases?
I think we lost
John. Let's go on to consent. Jan, okay. Would you speak to us about consent policies in Europe and how that's working?
Yeah, well, let me start by saying you when you introduced me, you gave me two titles. One was the title of a sales manager at InterSystems. The other one was the founding father of hashtag One Patient, One Record for Belgium. And that came into being because I basically, as a patient, became involved with, well, I had cancer, and then you get into, I need my data for a second opinion. And I thought, well, that's simply, I'll sign a piece of paper that gives consent to the hospital to get the data to someone else so that we can have a second opinion. It turned out mm-hmm. that it's slightly more complicated than that, because the first thing that happened was that they threw GDPR in my face as the reason for not giving me my data. Which is kind of funny, because if you look at the rules in GDPR, it says that I am entitled to have an overview of all the data that's available about me. So that's a side story that actually brings me to why consent and why I think it's important. I think it's important because patient consent shows a respect for the privacy and the autonomy of the patient. It is something that will actually improve the data quality, because all of a sudden the patient can help find errors, discrepancies, things that are not completely okay. And he can actually, and this is a short story I'd like to tell. One of the people that I interviewed in the past had an immune disease, and she went to a doctor, and that doctor was not doing a thorough job. He didn't look through everything that needed to be looked through and gave her the simple wave of a hand and said, oh, lady, you have some thyroid gland problems like so many women, blah, 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 instead of she had this disease. There were 17 other women in her family who had that disease. So it's not like she was going lightly over it. But because of the fact that no consent is required between doctors to see your records, the second doctor she went to see, who actually had been trained by the first doctor, didn't see the necessity of going deeper into it because his mentor had already judged that she didn't have that disease. In long story short, she had to go to 5 doctors before the disease was actually accurately diagnosed. So if proper consent would have been in place, she could have stopped the second doctor from seeing the diagnosis from the first one.
Hmm. Interesting. So that's the topic of consent among providers. John, I'd like to turn it back to you. What sort of examples of consent use cases among your customers with us in the United States?
Yeah, well, in the United States, consent can be different from state to state, which makes it very interesting as the government is really pushing for these, you know, consolidations of larger health systems. They start to span states, and, you know, the consent policies have to be available so that, you know, each facility has, you know, is following the rules of that particular state. And at the same time, these larger, you know, IDNs are actually crossing all the states. And it creates a little bit of a problem, especially when you start talking about, you know, FHIR. We're usually thinking of the FHIR as being more along the lines of a REST type of service, right? Where you're using it for mobile apps, you're using it for other things. And at the same time, these facilities are supposed to track how the information is being viewed or used. And there's this becoming this layer of separation, right? So it's not, I don't think it's going to be uncommon for a facility to say, oh, download our app. And someone's walking around with a mobile app and they're in New York City and maybe their provider's in New Jersey. And so I'm wondering how those consent policies and really the regulations are going to apply when people are in two different locations. And maybe the facilities don't even know, you know, where that person currently is located, and they're grabbing information from multiple systems. So with FHIR, I think we're going to have to be very careful about what's being used. So in one case I know of, FHIR is being combined with, you know, other types of data. It's being enriched by 3 or 4 or 5 different systems before it's, you know, served up into the patient's mobile app. And so the consent policy, you sort of get a couple layers away from the actual healthcare system because someone's put a layer of application or a layer of this. And then you have to think of how do I, as a healthcare system, identify who's viewed this information, who's viewed that information. And even if it's your own information, there should be some tracking of that. But I think FHIR is being used for systems as well. So, you know, I think there's going to be layers and layers of applications put in with FHIR. And I think it's going to create some problems with people trying to track and audit, you know, who's seeing what and when.
Jan, I think when you look at Europe, there may be a comparable, perhaps even more extreme version of what John just said. In the United States, you have laws in different states, and then you have federal laws. But in Europe, you have a GDPR, which is applicable to about 27 countries. Then obviously you have individual countries. But let me ask, are IDNs or integrated delivery networks generally limited to one country, or are you starting to see health systems that go into different countries?
There is, as far as I know, none that crosses a border. It's actually even worse. There are countries where you have, like in Belgium, where you actually have three healthcare systems that are separated from each other, even on a state level, because you have the Flemish region, you have the Walloon region, and you have the capital region, and they actually are even not capable of properly exchanging information amongst each other. So it gets really difficult to get information from one place to the next. And one of the things that when I started with hashtag one patient, one record for Belgium, what I noticed was that I got calls from Germany, from France, from Luxembourg, from Holland, the countries around Belgium. And they said, well, we have people that are cross-border workers, and when they get into an accident or whatever and they need care, we don't have any data of them. So that's how bad the situation currently is.
Is there any effort in Europe to create?
There is something called the European Health Data Space that is currently being discussed. European Health Data Space should facilitate some of this. But my biggest worry with that is that the first place where they are looking is secondary use of data, not primary use of data. So it's a bit of a problem in itself.
So, on a topic of consent, what is the status of patient consent in Europe? How would it be affected with the different political boundaries? How would people access their information or give consent to see, to limit who would access their information?
Well, let me start with Belgium, the country I live in. We have something that's called My Health Viewer that the government has put together, and that actually allows you to give consent to several doctors or to one doctor to see all of your data. Now, the problem with that is that populating that system is proving, let's say, at least challenging, because there are 6 or 7 EMRs that are active in the country. There's 169 hospitals. That's how small the country is. Communication is haphazard at best. You know, that's how bad the situation is. If you look at the UK, then between regions like Wales, like Scotland, like the UK itself, in England, those things are relatively well taken care of, but they're also not complete. Same as in Germany and in France. There is a good effort that's being done, but as far as I hear, it's far from correct. And then I'm not talking about Spain or Italy or Greece, where the current state of health care is questionable at best.
So we are approaching the end of this podcast episode, and John, I'd like to ask you if you'd care to just comment and wrap up. If you were able to have a wish, something, have a genie grant you a wish about fire or consent policy, you probably wouldn't want to make a wish about those two topics, but if you were limited to those two topics, what would you like to see in the United States?
I'd like to see, you know, the adoption roadmap, you know, be laid out for all of the people who are excited about fire. Because I think it would be nice for everybody to sort of be on the same page. Like, you know, what level of maturity is fire at? And what is the most useful use cases in terms of it, you know, implementing fire? You know, you don't, like, you know, like Jan was saying, you know, it's not everything, right? You don't want to just start going, oh, I'm going to do everything in fire, because you're going to create issues for your own healthcare system. And I think what it would be nice to have is a very basic roadmap of, you know, for your fire applications, start here. You know, start with, when you're looking at, you know, feeding a mobile app, when you're looking at feeding interactive communication to help populate some sort of application, whether it's a handheld mobile device or a tablet, you know, you're trying to do a little bit of light gathering of information about that patient, FHIR makes a lot of sense. But, you know, don't overdo. Take on a project at a time and understand what the impact of using FHIR is to that particular application. As far as consent, you know, I think it's probably as much education about, you know, to us as it is, you know, to the patients or anyone else in the sense that, you know, things are changing. And so there are times where I'm not quite sure, you know, what the impact is of having a mobile app, you know, across state lines, or having, you know, is that okay? Is it not okay? You know, am I following the rules of New Jersey or am I following the rules of New York? So I think there's some education on our side in terms of, you know, how do we approach these large IDNs across state lines, or in Jan's case, across countries, where they want to share information and put it into one location and do it in such a way that we're not, you know, breaking any rules or regulations or, you know, and that at the same time, we're keeping track of the information. So in the United States, you have to track anyone who sees any of that. So, you know, you need to be able to do all those things. And I think there's going to be some interesting conversations over the next few years of what that looks like. And I, you know, personally, I feel like I'm, you know, in the first grade in terms when it comes to FHIR. And I think most of us are, right? We're all still learning. But I think it's going to be some interesting times. And hopefully we can just start with simple things first.
Any closing statement, Jan? Reaction?
Yeah, well, while John was speaking, I actually had this little thought that said, actually, FHIR and consent are not that far apart. When you give it an acronym on the end, one side, FHIR, on the other, GDPR, they're actually in both in the same infancy state. And they were at a certain stage seen as the solution for the entire problem. And that's exactly not what they are. They have created their own problems. They have created their own issues. But on the other hand, what they have done is they have given us a handle to get from first grade to second grade. To use your words, John, because yeah. I think that was a very good analogy. And what I would wish for us to have would be somebody who is simple enough of mind to use these things where they are supposed to be used rather than just use them everywhere.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you for our listeners. This has been Jan Vekemans, a country sales manager in Belgium for InterSystems and the founder of hashtag One Patient, One Record for Belgium, and John Goodgame, a sales engineer for InterSystems in the United States. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Jordan.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.